directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
CKUT's annual funding drive runs Thursday, March 18th to Sunday, March 28th. Our programmers have been working hard at home all year, and it's time to celebrate their efforts. The theme of our first ever online drive is sowing the seeds of grassroots change, and we're asking you to support independent community media. Help us reach our goal of $25,000. Go to CKUT.ca to donate today.
Sowing the seeds of change, seeds of change. Sowing the seeds of change, seeds of change. Sowing the seeds.
The global outbreak of COVID-19 has affected all our lives in various ways. And it has notably drawn our attention to the intensified systemic racism and selective xenophobia towards our racialized friends in our Canadian society. It is understandable for each of us to feel anxious about this fatal disease. However, the sentiment of fear does not give us the right or the opportunity to conduct hate crime and to discriminate against our Asians, Blacks, Indigenous, and other racialized friends. It is not okay to associate the COVID-19 disease with Asians, particularly those of Chinese descent. It is not okay to conduct physical and psychological abuses towards racialized individuals. It is not okay to vandalize Asians and other marginalized owned businesses. We must stop normalizing and stop accepting racist conducts and hate speeches towards all racialized communities. Rather, in these unprecedented times of global pandemic, together, we must educate ourselves and others and be eager to understand race, systemic racism, and racial justice in Canada and elsewhere. Remember, whoever, wherever, and whenever we are humankind. We must learn to stand together as citizens of the world for a healthier, safer, and happier community.
Why you all on my ass so lonely? 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 Why you wanna own it, own it, own it, own it, own it, own it, own it? Must be 'cause I'm on it, own it, own it, own it, own it, own it, own it. Why you all on my ass? I'm trying to get this paper right now. I'm feeling like I'm higher than a skyscraper, trying to get myself to the level that we need. Why you trying to hold us back? Let's proceed.
Hater.
Don't never try to stop a real, real G. Too many haters and I'm on a tree. What they bought mine, stay far from me. Yeah, what I buy with your dark energy. Don't know a synonym, serenity. So me do it with ease, like a nice summer breeze. Fresh and ting, this is clean. Walking trophy, yo, a hood celebrity. Yeah, I just pace and bow. Tell them what it is when I stack it all. Like the way I do it, 'cause I chase the cows, pause. Why you all on my ass so lonely? 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 Why you wanna own it, own it, own it, own it, own it, own it, own it? Must be 'cause I'm on it, own it, own it, own it, own it, own it, own it. I am chaos, crab in a bucket, grade A, organic piece, a different type of cutlet. You can't stop me, made from a different fabric. 514 is when someone wreaked this havoc. Yo, I guess I'm on them treetop, but I'm never green, I just oversee how the haters feel when I'm overseas. South Beach, Nassau, Negril, them vets cause me do it for real. Don't ever let no one stop your shine. No shade, blind them with all your light.
They will try to hold you back, a dirty, dirty blight. But like MJB said, this my life, so
I just pace
and ball. Tell them what it is when I stack it out. Like the way I do it, cause I chase the cows. Chase the cows. Pause.
Why you all on my ass so lonely? Why you all on my ass so lonely?
Get off my ass.
So
y'all need to get off
my ass. Why you all on my ass so lonely? Why you wanna own it? Own it. Must be cause I'm on it. Own it.
Why you so all on my ass?
That Rihanna will present her multidisciplinary performance Afterglow digitally on March 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This will be the final live performance of her No Repairs album cycle. The performance, originally scheduled for last October, has been redesigned in a virtual and interactive format in collaboration with Synonym Sound and Théâtre Cercle Molière. With us today, we have Rihanna. Hi, Rihanna, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved in music in Montreal.
Well, I've been making music for quite a while, and this project that I have now, my electro alternative project, has existed for about 5 years. And some of the first shows I ever played were in Montreal because I had friends in the city, and it was a city that inspired me a fair bit. So I would come and play a show, but then I'd stick around for, you know, a month and just take in the city and write music and spend time with other artists. So it's a place where I feel my link to the community is important to me, and it's strong.
What inspired your multidisciplinary performance Afterglow?
Afterglow is an interesting project to me because it has grown and changed so much over the last year. So the project itself would never have existed if we hadn't gone into lockdown, because going into lockdown forced my team and I to think about a different way to put a show together. And we had thought, well, there are no rules at the moment. Why don't we try to make something a little different than we would, and if we were on tour? And this project is so big that I couldn't possibly plan it or organize it if I was on the road. So that is the flip side of what has been a tough year, of course, not being able to play live music. It was coming up with this interdisciplinary project that really built a physical world around the album, which had so many kinetic elements to it and so many visual elements to it.
Last time you were our guest on the Wednesday Morning After, you were up for multiple awards for your album No Repairs. Please tell us about that time 2 years ago and how it led you to Afterglow today.
Yeah, it's wild to think back to that time. Now on the other side of it, the album has been recognized as Best Francophone Album of the Year for Breakout West, and also Producer of the Year, which was a great honor for my co-producer and I. We were the first Francophones to receive that honor in the Western Canadian Music Awards. So the album was a little bit the little engine that could, you know. It was a labor of love made by a small group of artists and of collaborators, and now looking back, it's so exciting to see how far that project has come, and what we all of the people that we kind of collected along the way, all the different people that became involved with the project and lent their artistic vision to it. Afterglow is sort of the accumulation of all of that.
May we hear some of your music?
Absolutely.
This is Best of You on the Wednesday Morning After.
Take your time. shoot the whole thing down. By design, the hope was slight, no desire to do this right, so go ahead. Just give me a moment to speak to the best of you. I swear I would harden and handle the rest of you. Let's unwind. Get dizzy.
So your multidisciplinary performance of Afterglow will go on digitally March 19th. How do our listeners get tickets?
Well, the good news for listeners is that the show is available to everyone free of charge. We really wanted to make it something that everyone could take part in, and people will be able to watch the show itself on Friday, the 19th of March at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And on top of that, we're creating all kinds of content that people can enjoy through our social media platforms, all the different artists involved, and also through an online portal that we've created where people can really kind of dive into this strange world that we've made. So I'm hoping that people will join us on the 19th for the show, but also take a second to take a look through all the other pieces we created.
Why did you choose to share your current work digitally?
This year has forced so many of my colleagues and of course myself to think completely differently about how we make work and how we connect with people. And where I think some artists decided to really lay low, and I completely understand and think that that's as good a strategy as any other, you know, just collect your energy and create work so that when you can hit the road again or be out in the world again, that's there for you. The way we kind of chose to approach it, my team and I, was because I already love video work. I've already directed several music videos, and I love being a creative director. We thought, well, why don't we adapt this work that we're doing completely, and instead of approaching it as a, you know, a show that we're adapting to be online, let's build it from scratch as its own work of art that lives exclusively on that platform. Because this show is going to be filmed in such a way, and it's going to be presented in such a way, that we actually couldn't do it in person. We couldn't do it live. So we're really trying to treat it as a different medium and as an opportunity to do something different.
Where will copies of the performance of Afterglow be available to the listeners?
People can find Afterglow on the night of the 19th through Facebook, so through my artist page, which is Rayanna Music, or they can also visit theafterglow.net and find the link there on the night of the show.
May we listen to some more of your music?
Absolutely.
This is No Repair on CKUT.
Déjà goûté à trop. Déjà plané bien plus haut. Épuisé tous les propos. La gare au grand galop. On a déjà crié plus fort. Déjà craqué le record.
If our listeners want some free listening time or to buy your music, where should they go?
They should visit my website, which is rayanna.ca. So RAYANNAH.ca.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thanks so much for having me.
You have been listening to Rayanna speaking about her music. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
I'm Salima Hamarani, and on today's Making Contact.
I almost died because of COVID. I was so sick, And I wrote a last letter to my family in case I died and left it in my property.
We're airing a two-part series about the outbreak of COVID-19 within California prisons.
All of our carceral institutions are grossly overcrowded. And so you introduce one person and it is just the case study of how fast an infection spreads.
We are basically creating 36 incubators of COVID in the state.
We talk about mass releases and how they could help combat the staggering numbers in prisons.
Just release them. Release them to the families that are waiting for them. Release them to their home environments.
And we talk about why there's so much pushback to the idea. Here's part one in our series, The Pandemic Inside, COVID-19 and California Prisons.
77,000. Of that, more than 2,200 have died. In Hong Kong, 59 police officers are under quarantine after attending a bank.
We begin our story in San Quentin.
Positive for coronavirus. We turn now to Meg Terrell.
Right before COVID really hit here around December, it was on the news that like China has this thing that's going on, and you know, we're like, okay. But I wasn't really paying attention to it because I was getting ready to go to my board hearing to be free on February 28th.
That's Bun. He was in San Quentin State Prison in Northern California when the COVID-19 outbreak hit the U.S.
I appear in board and I gain my freedom. Now, after that, COVID was really serious.
As the infected passenger passed through busy SeaTac Airport in Seattle, the first confirmed U.S. case of the contagious
It's like, hey, it's spreading, it's in the United States, and then the prison started shutting down, like, oh, we're not giving you visits no more. Because I planned for a visit with my family before I was detained by ICE, and COVID hit, that killed my whole plan. I was like, okay, I'm not going to see my family before I leave. And now they're starting to put up, in San Quentin, they're starting to put up posters.
The posters described what COVID is and how it spreads, but most of the inmates didn't really pay attention to what the prison officials were saying. They were getting their information other ways.
Right now, they do still believe that the immediate risk to the American public is low, but that first human-to-human transmission...
Everybody's, like, stuck on the news, especially the older guys that are worried about it. And in San Quentin, it's a medical facility, so a lot of people are there for medical reasons. And all of us, we're like, it's going to be a matter of time until it gets in here. And when it gets in here, we're dead. And we're dead. Yeah, I was like, man, I got my parole date. I got to wait 120 days, and I'm counting like February, March, April, May, June.
There were no recorded outbreaks or reported cases at San Quentin of COVID-19 until this transfer happened from the California Institute of Men.
That's Swati Ryasam from the Stop San Quentin Outbreak Coalition. She's also a science associate at the University of California, San Francisco. She explains how the outbreak at San Quentin began in May of 2020.
They transferred a small number of incarcerated folks, involuntary transfers, to help mitigate an outbreak that was currently ongoing. And unfortunately, they transferred them in and mixed them with general population, but really failed to do even the most basic public health preventative guidelines, failed to test them.
They say, hey, Chino has a big outbreak, Chino State Prison. And we're watching this on the news. They're like, oh, dudes are dying. 10 people die, 11. Like, damn, Chino's getting hit hard. The next thing we knew, hey, bro, they brought a bus from Chino. Once they brought a bus in from Chino, two guys said, hey, I got symptoms.
Then COVID began circulating through San Quentin very quickly.
People started getting COVID. These old guys are starting to fall out. They start getting COVID. And then they're like, you know what, we're going to test a few people just to see how many people, you know, if somebody has it, we're going to see.
At first, the prison just spot tested a few inmates, so they had no idea how bad COVID had gotten inside. But eventually, as more and more people started to fall ill, prison officials finally decided to start mass COVID testing.
When they did that one major test, it came back, the number just skyrocketed. Hundreds are sick in San Quentin.
At any carceral facility, any place like San Quentin, it's a powder keg. The buildings, especially San Quentin, the building is so old. It has seen numerous outbreaks before based on the fact that the building is really poorly designed. It is overcrowded. All of our carceral institutions are grossly overcrowded. And so you introduce one person and it is just the case study of how fast an infection spreads.
One time, I was scared of COVID, and with the open cell, I blocked where I slept at so the air don't get in there with towels and stuff. They try to write me up. I'll write you up. I say, dude, do you know it's COVID, right? Yeah, I could catch it. No, I'm write you up. And me getting a parole date already, like, oh, I can't get a write-up. That'll stop my whole parole date. So I left it open. So I started getting symptoms. My roommate, he has COVID. I was like, man, I hope it's just a headache. But I'm getting night sweats. And I was scared that if I say I got COVID, they're going to take my date, lock me up, do something.
At first, Bun's symptoms were light. They even seemed to disappear once in a while.
They come to check me. My temperature's fine. My oxygen level's fine.
But in reality, the virus was all over San Quentin, and Bun did have COVID. It got very, very serious.
I was severely sick. I almost died because of COVID. I was so sick. And actually, I didn't have no hope of being free. I was like, I'm going to go. I wrote a last letter to my family in case I died and left it in my property.
Eventually, 75% of prisoners within San Quentin tested positive for COVID-19. That's a phenomenal infection rate. But the virus didn't stop at one facility. Currently, California has one of the worst outbreaks within its carceral system in the entire world. How bad? Here's Aaron Littman. He's a deputy director of the UCLA Law COVID-19 Behind Bars Data Project.
All but two California prisons have some active COVID cases. Virtually everyone. One of them at California Men's Colony, there's over 1,000 active cases.
The true scale of the pandemic inside isn't totally clear. Researchers like Aaron have to rely on the prisons themselves to get the data that they need.
Prisons are inherently, by design, opaque, secretive places not used to transparency. And that has persisted through the pandemic.
So Aaron uses data published by the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, or CDCR.
The number that's reported is certainly an undercount, but CDCR is currently reporting just over 4,400 active cases. They've had 44,500 in total. At least 144 people have died of COVID.
And it's not just the prisoners.
Over the course of the pandemic, just over 14,000 staff have tested positive.
For some comparison, the infection rate within prisons is about 7 times higher than the general population. The death rate is also much higher.
As of the summer, the age-adjusted death rate, meaning the death rate that you would expect if the distribution of ages was the same in the prison population and the general population, was 3 times higher.
While the pandemic is bad on the outside, the situation is clearly much worse inside prison walls. So what do we do? How do we protect prisoners and stop the spread of COVID inside carceral facilities?
The Senate Public Safety Committee and the Senate Special Pandemic Emergency Response Committee will come to order.
In November of 2020, the California State Senate held a special hearing about COVID in prisons.
We will hear from the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation and others about the work to prevent the spread of COVID-19 in state prisons and what has occurred during the 4.5 months since the earlier Senate hearing on these topics.
During the hearing, Dr. Joseph Bick, who is the Director of Correction Healthcare Services for CDCR, outlined the agency's new COVID guidelines.
Additional specific strategies and practices that have been implemented have included reducing non-essential movement, expanding our COVID testing capacity, and reducing turnaround times so that we receive most results within 2 days. We also mandated the use of N95 masks for all inmates and patients and staff during our transportation. And utilizing these revised transfer protocols, we've safely transferred over 7,000 patients between institutions over the last several months without incident.
We did reach out to CDCR, but we were told they're not granting interviews at this time. From the hearing, we know that CDCR has expanded COVID protocols. Due to past concerns about staff refusing protective equipment, there's now a mask mandate. There's more routine testing. There's more hand sanitizer. But for observers like Swati, these measures are not enough.
Definitely stop trying to involuntarily transfer people. Just release them.
Swati and other advocates think the other protective measures introduced by CDCR are bound to fail. And that's because of the way prisons work. So let's take a few minutes to talk about why the design of American prisons creates such a perfect pandemic environment. First off, prisons aren't designed to stop a pandemic. They're meant to contain a lot of people. And so once a virus enters a prison, it's impossible, even with really high medical standards, to stop its spread.
Everybody is impossibly close. There is no social distancing inside of a carceral facility, period.
When there's a flu outbreak, we get locked down for that because they cannot stop a flu. A normal flu outbreak, they cannot stop it.
And San Quentin's situation is particularly bad because it's so overcrowded.
San Quentin is made for one-person occupancy in a cell. But due to overcrowding, they double-bunked everybody. I mean, if people could think about it, it's like living in a bathroom, a small bathroom. And we can't socially distance because it's open bar. So from my cell to my neighbor's cell, it's about not even a foot. It's a concrete away.
You have these folks who are sharing sanitation facilities and who are sharing eating facilities, whatever. You have folks who are working inside of the prison, right? You have guys who work in chow.
There's also a lot of movement within a prison, which might be surprising to hear. Guards move about, and as Fati mentioned, inmates help keep the facility running.
Those folks are super vulnerable because they're essential workers inside of the carceral economy.
And these are the guys that's going to the kitchen, getting the food and, you know, helping clean up. And they were running around like they were the runners. They were running around the tiers, open tiers, talking to everybody, not knowing that they're carrying COVID because they're not showing signs.
And finally, guards have a habit of using punishment to control behavior, which actually makes the disease much worse. Here's Hadar Avaram, a lawyer working on litigation on behalf of San Quentin prisoners, charging mishandling of the pandemic by prison officials.
One of the big problems that happened in the San Quentin outbreak was exactly that. The medical authorities in the prison sort of confounded medical things with punishment things. Like, for example, when people reported symptoms or tested positive, they were being sent to isolation in solitary confinement. Those are cells that for decades are associated with punishment, with bad things that happen to them. You can't do that. What you're doing is discouraging people from testing and discouraging people from reporting symptoms.
People will hide from solitary because on a normal flu, if you're sick and you got the flu, they take you, put you in solitary without the comfort you already have. Now they're throwing you into an empty cell, a dirty cell with nothing in there, nothing to soothe yourself. They're not giving you nothing to help you. So everybody's like, I'd rather stay in my cell, take care of myself with some of the little comfort that I have.
And then what you're doing is you're staying out in the general population and you're infecting other people because I don't have a humane way to actually manage your illness.
And they're not admitting because they want to risk people's life. It's just they're like, we don't trust CDCR. They're not doing nothing for us. And we're hearing people in death row dying or people going to solitary dying by themselves. So, you know, in our situation, like, I don't want that.
As the death rate from COVID began to mount, so did organizing and legal challenges. The first District Court of Appeal in California in October ruled that the prison system had shown, quote, deliberate indifference in its handling of the pandemic, which was, quote, constitutionally untenable.
So the prison claimed that they were doing other commendable things like giving people protective equipment and, you know, and cleaning up and hanging posters and whatever it is that they were doing. And the decision that we got in Von Steich's case was that was not enough.
A California appeals court is ordering the state to cut the prison population at San Quentin in half because of COVID-19. About 75% of the inmates at San Quentin have tested positive for coronavirus.
The ruling sounds like a huge victory for prisoners, but it's a little complicated.
The state says the order means 1,100 inmates will have to either be released or sent to other prisons. State prison officials have not said if they will appeal the court's ruling.
Now, if the judges had said, you need to release these people, this would have probably been overturned on appeal pretty easily, because they're basically imposing their discretion on who's dangerous, who isn't dangerous, on the prison authorities' discretion. That's not what they did. They said, we're going to leave it up to CDCR. So first of all, they've been fighting the decision tooth and nail. So they're now asking the California Supreme Court. They've petitioned the California Supreme Court for review. But the problem is that even if the remedy is enforced, it still leaves them discretion to transfer.
In order to comply with the judge's orders, CDCR wants to transfer inmates out of San Quentin into other institutions, not release them. So why is this a problem?
So there's actually no safe way to conduct a transfer.
That's James King from the Ella Baker Center.
And one other thing that I would say about transfers, from my experience being incarcerated, let's say CDCR has found some safe protocol in order to conduct transfers. Let's just give them that and assume that's true. There is no evidence that it will be followed to the letter the way that it's drafted. For instance, one of the things that happens when a transfer is a person is tested. After that testing, they are then in contact with their cellmates, with the guards, with other people in their vicinity. So there's no way to actually isolate them.
And if CDCR cannot ensure prisoners are COVID-free before transferring them between institutions,
that's just moving people around the system from dangerous place to dangerous place, playing Tetris with human lives. There's no way to safely move them. This is what started this mess in the first place. And more people will get sick and more people will die.
Currently, CDCR has at least been forced to limit how many transfers are able to do.
The problem they're facing now, and this is why they've had to freeze the transfers that they were planning to do, is that there actually is nowhere to transfer people. There is not a single prison in CDCR that does not have a COVID outbreak right now.
As of airing this piece, CDCR has started to fight the ruling to reduce San Quentin's population, and it has not released 50% of inmates as ordered. Meanwhile, COVID numbers continue to skyrocket in all California prisons. You're listening to Making Contact and part one of our series, The Pandemic Inside, COVID-19 and Prisons. To keep up to date on our shows and get behind the scenes information, visit radioproject.org. And now, back to our show. Welcome back to Making Contact. We're talking about COVID-19 in California prisons and the possibility of mass release as a way to fight the pandemic. One of the surprising realizations I had while researching this piece and talking to prison experts is that we've actually been here before. About 10 years ago, courts had ordered all California prisons to cut their inmate population.
Every prison has a certain number of people that it's designed to hold. And for many, many decades in California, our prisons were grossly overcrowded. So throughout, much of the 20th century, much of the late 20th century, and up until 2009, our prison system overall was a 200% capacity. So we actually had twice as many people as the prison is equipped to hold. And then one of the outcomes of that was that it was impossible to give people minimal health care. So people were getting sick. They weren't seeing doctors for months and sometimes years. The pharmacy, the administration was a mess. And the result of that was that once every 6 days, somebody would die out of a completely preventable disease just because of system neglect. There was litigation going on about both the physical and mental health aspects of this going on for quite a while, a class action.
Eventually, the class action suit reached the Supreme Court of California. Here's Emily Harris from the Ella Baker Center.
And the Supreme Court upheld, lower court rulings in the case that was called Plata Coleman. That meant that CDCR, the Department of Corrections in California, needed to reduce the population of the prisons, that like a constitutional amount of overcrowding would be 137.5% of design capacity.
Which is still overcrowded, but is better than being at 200% capacity. At that time, the policy called realignment was seen as a huge victory. It would have been one of the biggest releases of prisoners in a state which had, until then, incarcerated more people than anywhere else in the world. But once again, the reality of the situation was a little complicated.
People think that it meant that people were released. Nobody was released. It was an attrition. So CDCR stopped accepting people who were serving low-level felonies, so non-serious, non-violent, non-sex offenses. In the past, anybody who was serving over a year or more for a felony conviction would serve that in state prison. But now, if you were serving a low-level felony, you would serve your time in county jail.
Which then became grossly overcrowded.
So we know there's been an uptick in violence in jails, deaths in jails.
And transferring prisoners from state prison to local jails created a new set of problems for organizers and prison advocates.
So the majority of counties in the state of California have been trying to build new jails. Many have built new jails, and then there's been a significant amount of organizing happening to fight jail expansion. And all of that was because sheriffs were like, hey, now we're overcrowded. And then I think because the state had pissed off the sheriffs by moving all of these people to them, the state was like, of course we'll give you all this money to build jails.
The parallels to what's happening now are inescapable. And Emily Harris wants us to be very cautious about the consequences of legal and organizing battles now during the pandemic.
You know, realignment was seen as a major reform, this major victory. In a lot of ways, it was just like a renegotiation. And then what happens in that was for a really long time, you couldn't put sheriffs on blast about the conditions because it was like, well, we just did it. We have to let it play out. We have to like give it a chance to work. And then it's like 5 more years and 100 more people are dead. So we have to not try to make another solution that we're going to ultimately have to like fix later.
There's one other legacy from realignment, which is really important to understand because it's had repercussions on today's decisions about COVID and releasing prisoners.
Another thing that this did is it cemented this idea that there's a difference between so-called violent and non-violent inmates. The problem is that from a public health perspective, this distinction doesn't actually mean anything. Here is what we actually know, and this is one of the areas in criminology where we have so much robust research on this that we can say this with a pretty high degree of certainty. Generally speaking, there is very little, if any, correlation between what the person is doing time for and whether they're going to reoffend. So the people that we think of as risky on the basis of their offensive commitment are not necessarily more dangerous. And in fact, for many categories of offenses, it's a lot more likely that people who are convicted of lesser offenses are going to reoffend than people convicted for very serious crimes. A big part of why this is true has to do with age. A lot of the people in California prisons who are doing time for very serious crimes, I'm talking things like murders, you know, armed robberies, like very serious crimes, are old. They're people who have been doing decades behind bars. Not only does that deteriorate your health to the point that committing violent offenses is kind of a challenge, but people just age out of crime. People tend to age out of crime around their mid-20s. In fact, we are far less at risk from this kind of 65-year-old man with a lung condition living quietly with his family on the outside than we are of the same person incubating this disease behind bars and infecting you and yours, as well as the people behind bars.
This is the hardest part to grapple with, because the idea of releasing violent offenders terrifies people. Of course, because people want to be safe. But if Hadar is right, and some violent offenders are safe to release, we do have to consider releasing them. Because one of the other surprising realizations I had while investigating this piece is that prisons play a very particular role in pandemics.
So there's this myth that the prison is impermeable, that it's locked, but actually nothing could be farther from the truth. The prisons are very permeable. Every day, thousands of people go in and out of every prison in the country. So it's easier to think of the prison not as having this metal gate, but more kind of like a mesh that things go through in and out all the time. And of course, this is exactly the kind of opportunity that a virus is looking for.
I didn't really understand much about how prisons contribute to disease. So to learn more about the connection between prisons and COVID specifically, I reached out to a researcher named Gregory Hooks.
So my name's Gregory Hooks. I'm a professor of sociology at McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario. I began work on this in the late spring, and the numbers coming out of prisons and jails were absolutely horrific. And so it seemed to me fairly obvious that prisons were ongoing super spreader events.
Gregory did a study with the Prison Policy Institute, and he wanted to know whether the outbreak within prisons was affecting the communities around them.
So one of the things that we looked at in this study is we looked at the larger economic area. So these are the counties where people would commute to work, you know, wholesale, retail, different sorts of economic activities.
And he focused on economic areas because that's how a virus spreads. It's not just the immediate vicinity and interactions, but many generations of interactions that allow a pandemic to take hold. Here's what he found.
We looked at the growth in COVID-19 from May until August. I do have intentions to update this through the year, but as of August, we estimated that Los Angeles saw nearly 100,000 additional cases, 94,000 cases. The New York economic area, we believe, got something like 64,000. So certain cities got hit very hard.
And for the country as a whole?
According to our analysis, there were over 566,000 cases of confirmed cases of COVID-19 as of August 1st.
That's over 500,000 additional cases of COVID just linked to the presence of prisons. And that's just by August of 2020.
For me, that number was eye-popping. Again, this was in August, and compared to current rates, that seems like a small number because the U.S. has a pandemic out of control. But as of August 1st, if you compare the number of cases that we link to mass incarceration to the total number of cases reported in the world, that would have been fifth in the world. And I suspect if I rerun these numbers, rerun these analyses and update it through the year, you're talking about caseloads that are just staggering. This is the tip of the iceberg, I believe.
That was Gregory Hooks talking about his research with the Prison Policy Institute. And that's it for this edition of Making Contact. Again, this was just part one of a two-part series, so make sure to join us next week for part two of The Pandemic Inside, COVID-19 and Prisons. We'll talk a lot more about mass releases, jails in Florida, and we'll also talk about the possibility of vaccinations.
I tried to say goodbye to all the people I knew in my block. They were all sick.
In the meantime, visit us at radioproject.org to learn more. On Facebook, we're Making Contact. And on Instagram, we're Making Contact Radio Project. The Making Contact team includes Sonia Green, Monica Lopez, Anita Johnson, Sabine Blazin, and I'm Salima Hamarani. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
CKUT's annual funding drive runs Thursday, March 18th to Sunday, March 28th. Our programmers have been working hard at home all year, and it's time to celebrate their efforts. The theme of our first ever online drive is sowing the seeds of grassroots change, and we're asking you to support independent community media. Help us reach our goal of $25,000. Go to CKUT.ca to donate today.
Sowing the seeds of change, seeds of change. Sowing the seeds, sowing the seeds of change, seeds of change. Sowing the seeds of change.
In a world where corporate radio rules the airwaves, in a land where nonprofit radio depends on donations to stay on the air, In a time when it costs $60 an hour to broadcast our signal, only one person can keep CKUT alive. You have a chance to be part of the action. You have a chance to be a hero. Donate to CKUT during its funding drive to keep quality programming alive. Call 514-907-9424 or visit www.ckut.ca to save our world.
Well, you know, Jesus didn't die for us so we could be halfway between two places. He didn't die for us so we could not exactly be a total mess or a failure anymore, but yet never really be victorious either. And a lot of people, I think, get stuck somewhere in the middle. And they've got too much of God to go on, to go back, but not enough of God to go on. And so it's very important to me that I do whatever part I can do with the calling on my life to help people be all that
I'm trying to sell myself, and I will do it by myself. I don't trust a soul, and I don't need no fucking help. I'm paranoid that everybody's out to try and get me. I'm looking over shoulders as I'm passing through the deli. Maybe it's my skin, or maybe it's the way I dress. I'm tearing up my limbs, and I won't make it to the next. I'm walking down the street, and I'm anticipating death. All because a motherfucker looked at me, I said, I go into the void. Danger, no less who's passing the strangers. So scared they're acting invasive. Oh dear, they're snatching my face up. Yeah, yeah, I'm happy I made it right under the haste. Hang on my waist, I'm planning to escape. Gradually they hit my ass on the pavement. Panic degrade is the bottom of my face. I'm having a little bit trouble. I saw a man who was sinister and he was bleeding. I thought he was serial, maybe he wasn't. Thought he gonna kill me, the blade in the stomach. The void is a place of the torment. A woman is someone with spirits from her up below us. Diamonds of death, corners of corners. Don't say I didn't want you, just say I didn't want you.
To the void, I go into the void. I go into the void. I go into the void. Fuck! I go into the void. Fuck! I go into the void. Into the void. Fuck! I go into the.
And so we might say this is an experience.
You're tuned to Butcher T's Noontime Cuts, hitting every Friday from noon to 2, playing your wide variety of music just to make your afternoon delight just right. So stay locked at the CKT 90.3 FM.
Sunshine. Oh, yeah. Special.
This life, this life.
Maddox World.